Welcome to the ODD Collective on Wolf Spirit Radio and everbeyond.info. Oppositional Defiant Disorder. Hosted by Luz Aguibena, Nancy L. Hopkins, and Cindy Evans. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Welcome, my guest, Ellen Atkin. We're going to talk tonight about some things that might enlighten some people, which is really, really important now. And I want to thank Luz Aguibena. She turned over her space to me. This is my first night, so if I'm a little stuttered, please forgive me. I'll get into the swing of it here. And Ellen and I just had a conversation right before the show about the kinds of things that are going on in our society and how we're actually kind of stepping outside the model and making a way of it. She is an aerial photographer, and she takes these amazing photographs, and she's living totally as an artist and making a living as an artist, and I'm much in spirit with her because she is I am myself kind of a bohemian, I guess, and I don't work really for anyone, but I work for myself first and then take jobs as they come along. Somehow I manage to make it. So I like that lifestyle, and I like the freedom because I am free and we're all free. So
yeah,
Ellen,
hi, Ellen,
I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, so that people can kind of get an idea of where we're at, because, you know, some people that are on know about my history a little bit, but we'll kind of go over that later. But I just want to hear about what you're doing. Yeah, I want to hear what you're doing.
Or my history?
Well, sort of both. Yeah, I mean, well, because
this radio show or just my life?
Well, I think that the programming part of it is what we really want to kind of focus on, but how you've kind of made your way out of it, but a little history about the programming and, you know, what actually happened to you in your life and your experience that kind of opened your eyes. Okay.
Okay. Well, I would say that, you know, I was born into a family that, my mother was part of the MKUltra mind control experiments done in Montreal in the 50s by Dr. Ewan Cameron, who was also working with Sidney Gottlieb, and who was employed by Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA at the time in this state. So this doctor in Montreal was quite famous and dominated the papers with his, well, what now is generally conceived as of a barbaric experiments on people. So my mother was part of that. She went through the program, apparently the sleep therapy, which would keep people up for up to 30 days in a drug state with a tape recorder under the pillow, saying something like, I'm a good mother, I'm a bad mother, something like that, and stuff like that. And then, anyway, she was, she came out of that at some point. I don't really know the timeline. I'm trying to do research on it. It's hard. My mother's dead, my father's dead. And then married my father in kind of a whirlwind sort of three-month courtship, who has his interesting connections to well, at least religion and politics, I can say for sure. But We were in Montreal at the time. They were in Montreal at the time, and he was working at the military college in Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, which just happens to be the place where the one of the first little terror attacks happened that set off Harper's Bill C-51. Bill. There was two, one on Parliament Hill last year, and then the one just before it. So this was like our little mini 911 that was supposed to, you know, rush in this secret police bill, which, you know, it did. But that's where I was born, and that's where my father was. That was his first job, was at a military college in Montreal, outside of Montreal. So oddly, you know, it's just odd, because after he quit that, that was it. He never was, and he wasn't part of the military. So little things like that. He had his own history of mental illness. My mother was on psychotropic drugs, antidepressants and tranquilizers, her whole life after that. And, you know, didn't talk about it much, like a lot of these victims. And so I lived sort of under the guise of this, everything's normal, but it wasn't. There was a lot of dysfunction in my family. So anyway, what happened to her was sad. It was a slow, steady decline. She was scapegoated, like many people are in her situation, by her family as just, you know, someone who couldn't be controlled, someone who was crazy and mental problems. However, there was no, I can't get to reason for any of this. Did something happen? The only living member of the family now is her twin sister. Twins are very significant in this program as well. They were targeting twins. My mother was a twin. So I, my sister, she went insane when she was 16, became locked up in a hospital for 10 years. She's out now and doing okay, but she's mentally classified as disabled. She's on over 10 psychotropic drugs every day. She has to take a couple of the zines and lithium. She's at the maximum recommended dosage of every one of her meds, and has been for 30 years, which, you know, to any one of us would have us, like,
Ellen,
you know,
I
just impaled.
Can I just interject something right here? Because... Mm-hmm. I was much like that a few years ago. Before I decided to have my last child, I was on that, more than that, many different pills a day, and I was like that for about 4 years. So I was a complete zombie most of the time. And I think there's a lot of people out there that are kind of living like that now. I mean, if people are kind of paying attention to that behavior in their loved ones, and then they're wondering, you know, why are they having such difficulties? You know, it's important that they listen to this show and they share it so that they can kind of identify that in their own family as an experience that is not just happening to you and I, but to many other people all over, you know, in all the countries, because it's kind of the set thing. The psychiatry and
it's dominant in the Western countries.
Obviously. Oh yeah, in the Western, of course.
Probably
yeah.
More so yeah. In North America, I mean, Canada.
Right. Right.
The U.S. are their real breeding grounds for this. You know, it was definitely a carry on of the programs that the Nazis were involved with. There's even some rumors that Joseph Mengele was at the hospital in Montreal, the Allen Memorial Hospital, as it was called, Royal Victoria Hospital, and that, you know, spottings of him there. There's just, you know, family, wreckages of families of these people all over the country. And it wasn't just the people who went in with mild depression think they were going to get some help. It was children of the military, not all children of the military, but a lot. Street kids, orphans, children of political dissidents, and natives, of course. It was a lot of people. There's quite a lot of awareness now of this psychological torture that happened to these young people, some of them were children in these experimental programs. My mother was an adult going into it. Who knows how she was targeted? You know, it could have just been that she went there for some help. You know, because she was depressed, mildly depressed. I mean, I don't really know the story. Neither does her sister. So, you know, but like a lot of people just went in there thinking, wow, there was newspaper articles every day about the wonders this guy was doing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And it could have been the kind of a thing where they offered money. I mean, they did that back then, too. Come in, you know, and take our survey or whatever. And
The Leonard Cohen did that. He was part of this experiment.
Yeah.
And he was part of the, he got money. Some of them did get money. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the parents got money. I'm going to mention one of my colleague friends now, Anne Diamond. She's an author, a writer. She grew up in Montreal. She was part of the child experiments here. Her father was in the military. Her parents got paid to put her in one of these programs and put a down payment on their house. That's how they got their first house. So anyway, read her book. I'm going to recommend her book, My Cold War, by Anne Diamond. And I believe it's available on several of these sites. And it's fascinating. All her work is fascinating, but she is a definite go-to person for these types of TIs, these survivors. Anyone who's been part of this can be a TI. People like me and Anne, we broke the programming. We were rebels, and so I spent most of my life in the fringe. And now I'm basically just a business person doing my own thing. That is how I identify. Just happens to be in the art field, I can talk about it because I didn't buy into any of the programming. I broke away from it. But I've got to say that I didn't have any support when I was young doing this. So I had to, just muddle my way through doing crappy jobs and everything else and getting into debt, which is, basically what everybody does. But I felt very frustrated my whole life about that. But things are much better now. I've created my world pretty well. But I do see, synchronicities with, my own esoteric examples of my own, within my own life, reflected all around me. And I'm aware of this because I have my own intuition, which is probably what saved me the whole time, right? My own intuition. I was offered the chance to become one of these mind-controlled guinea pigs. It was like that was actually the only thing that we were offered. In a way, it wasn't like, hey, this is what you're going to do with your life, but certainly we were pushed always into, getting help, because everything was so dramatic. And I had to shun it because I saw that it wasn't helping anyone that I, in my family.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I did go a 180 on that, and I don't know how, targeted I am, not. I don't really care. I have my own way of going about things, and I have my own way of fighting the power, let's say, right? I'm an activist. I am connected to the community of activists here in Canada and BC. I always have been. I'm connected to clear thinkers. I'm connected to the cultural intelligentsia. I'm connected to certain political figures as well. I know a lot of people through my family, I must add. My father was into politics. He was a liberal in Ontario. And I became a page in the Ontario legislature as a child, which is something he got me into, which allowed me to have quite a lot of understanding of the system of business of government. So as a child, I was like 12, I think, and I was serving as a page, which is your job. It's a job. You deliver water, and the members put up their hand, and they want to pass some papers here or there, whatever. So that's what you do. And then you get tutoring there. You go there every day. You get tutoring, and you get time off school, and you get paid as well. So it was a cool little experience for me. But that was where I saw, I had very well impressed at that time of what politics was all about. One of the mentors that I did get out of that was Stephen Lewis. He was He was the leader of the NDP party at the time, and he's the son of David Lewis, who was the founder of the NDP party with Tommy Douglas, who has since been voted the most influential Canadian in the world. So, but Stephen Lewis is a wonderful man. He's still working with his wife, Michelle Landsberg. They're doing, they're actually getting down into grassroots activism. He's been a working with some Forest Action Network here in BC. Everyone's on board trying to stop the pipeline and the insane, you know, rabid, adoration to this death industry. So he's on board with that now, but he's been a high-level diplomat for most of his life after that, but a very, very smart man. So he's a man who's not, and a man who has some conscience. Whereas I noticed that most of these players in the house, when I was a child doing the page work, just had no humanity, especially the ruling conservatives at the time. They were just like stuffed cardboard figures that were, you know, a wall of power, and that's it. The Liberals had a little panache, and the NDP had, you know, people power, and that's pretty much still the way it is. So, that's how I kind of got a bit of my feeling of being an activist, an effective activist, because I don't feel separated from my government, or I don't feel afraid of speaking up. And then I have my own way that I've carved through my life, and, you know, God knows, you know, everyone's got an opinion. Well, I might as well chirp in with mine. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, anyway, so that's kind of what I do. And I feel like the right now the fight to power move is not to, it's really direct action. That's what it is. It's direct action is the most effective means of confronting the powers that be, which is, you know, standing in the way of the pipelines, which the Camp Uma Stoughton is doing up there in Hazelton Quesnel area. They're just actually claiming their land and not letting the people pass. And that's staved off a few years of development coming through there. Many, many protests as well are taking place here. For direct action for me, in terms of, you know, if someone wants to infringe on my sovereignty and my personal space, you know, say someone tries to attack me, right? Whatever that would be through government licensing, fines, whatever. I mean, sometimes I'll just, you know, acquiesce because it's too much trouble. Like, I am going to pay this one thing. But it's just like, I don't... But there's instance in the last 6 months here in Langley. I live in a township called Langley in British Columbia, which is, I think, quite a... backwards, it's definitely due for a change. The whole country is going to flip over real soon, but Langley's part of the old guard of Christian conservatives that don't really, you know, change. They just don't. However, there's, you know, and these guys, they're not just going to use regular means. They're going to use their bag of dirty tricks as well as whatever, you know, fundamental support base they think they can rely on. However, this year it's going to be a whole different game. And one of my neighbors had a problem. Anyway, direct action, social media, YouTube exposés, that's how we're going to change the power. That's what Bill did, right?
Yeah.
That's how he did it. He just
Bill
said,
Breakbury.
Screw you, I'm not going to ask you if it's okay, I'm not going to ask you if you could please do it better, you know, change it so that it was better. It's just going around them, you know, coming at them from the sides and going, you know, going, na 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 na, that's it, deal, right? And then all of a sudden, oh, they bent down, and oh boy, they get a turn, and that's what I think happened, is that, you know, with Bill's expose in 2012, that's what happened. It created a rent in space-time, you could say, and, you know, forced the powers that be to deal with it, and it's just created a whole new paradigm, a whole new reality. In that,
I'm glad you brought in Bill Breakbrider, because I forgot to actually honor him in this show, because essentially this show was started because of him, and
right.
And we do have videos out that he recently released of him explaining how he's going into hiding. And he's working for us, and that part of that, part of what you've been saying, Ellen, is about that working for him, and for each one of us in a way that's, we kind of stand up and say, I can make this little change in my life, and that says no to what they're doing. And even though we don't think that what we spend our money on, you know, what we put our, it's really about our value, what we put our value to, and that translates into money, but it translates into many other things besides that. And it's like, what do we put our investment in? We get a choice about how we make an investment with our value. And, I think it's really nice to hear that you're making your way in this world, and you're not in the matrix, so to speak.
But not of it.
Well, you have to kind of be in it, but the deal is that we can kind of jump out of it whenever we have to. We only jump in when we have to be in there, because there's a certain protocol, and we need to get something done back in the other place. So that's really how I kind of use it. And I think that it's important for people to realize that we can make a difference just by, you know, what companies we support, what issues we support.
Oh, that's the slow way, you know. That's still just dead fish flow with the stream way, you know. And, it's the slow way. The fast way is direct action. Coming up, going, you know, right on the side where they're not expecting. Like, doing a YouTube expose. The Langley Animal Protection Services tried to extort $1,000 out of my neighbor because they had her dog. It was just all based on, you know, erroneous information. And, threatened to kill the dog if she didn't give them the money. So she negotiated a release based on some money, and then this payment plan that was just completely erroneous as well. It was not even any mathematical association with interest. It just went from $1,000 to $1,400. Anyway, I did a YouTube expose with her talking about it, put it on the internet, and emailed it to the mayor and the council. So, and I also advised her to put a stop payment on those checks, which she did, accompanied by a letter of explaining her situation, being a single mom and couldn't pay that, and there was, she didn't even get a bill. So they backed down. So this is an example of, when people, they're always trying to isolate and target people individually, put the fear into them, and then break them. But if people stand up for each other, then they get a little bit, there's a witness. Because everything that the powers that be are doing is illegal. If you're aware of the sovereignty movement, there's really nothing anyone can do. If you stand up and you say, I do not consent, as soon as you consent to whatever, engage, engender, and join with whatever they're saying, you're basically forming some kind of tacit contract with them. If you just say, I do not consent, you do the work. I'm busy here. Well, if you want me to talk to you anymore, you're going to get a bill. Right? And then all of a sudden it's like, and then changes, and then, the person who actually has some freaking balls, right? Now, that's the way it is for a lot of people, like farmers, a lot of land people, we're just like that. That's what being a regular person was. Then it became part of this mind control experiment that infiltrated through popular culture. So these Frankenstein methods that happened to my mother, electrodes on the head, 20 times amplified shock treatment, like for 3 months solid, that was the old way. The new way, it's much more sophisticated. And you can see that this generation from, the 60s, all TV is a part of it, but certainly, in the last 20 years, it's been amplified through so many means. The internet, television, cell phones, chemtrails, HARP, all that stuff, it's food, it's all been attacked, it's all part of the same program, so it's a subtle thing, it's in popular culture, and there's no there's really no alternative other than people's spirit, you know, or just a knowingness in themselves that they can rely upon as, you know, knowing that this is not true, not something they have to, you know, bow down to, this system of domination and control.
I wanted to say in here, especially that part there where the methods have not changed. They're just not as hands-on as they used to be. Now they do all of those things electronically, like you said, through the TV and all of that. But, you know, also, you know, we are antennas ourselves.
And so
even for a lot of people that aren't aware that they're being targeted, they actually are, because we're all walking mini antennas, and essentially they can take over our frequencies because we are frequency, and of course they know that, but a lot of us don't, and that's part of the and I'm a do not consent person too. I say it all the time, and I say it out loud, and people stare at me sometimes, but I'm like, right. I do not consent to this. And then I look at them and say, do you consent to this? And they go, no. And I said, then say it. Right?
Exactly.
Because it is an energetic frequency. And if I have somebody else say it too, then it makes it that much more powerful. And if the next guy does it too, then, you know, pretty soon we're all saying we do not consent. And they can't fight that frequency and that energy. They really can't. Because it becomes too strong.
The system has no power in itself. It's only us consenting to it.
Yeah, give it power. Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. That we give it over, and that, you know, that's part of what this conversation is about.
Yeah, I'll give it some power. You know, there's good things in the system. There are. There's good people in the system. I mean, there's reasons for some of these rules that make sense. I mean, you know.
Absolutely. We have to have rules. There's no doubt about it, but we don't need to have a bunch of liars and cheats and, you know,
blatantly, and, you know, they're really so, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I can't even, you know, Harper and Christy Clark.
It is unbelievable.
It really, truly, truly is, yeah. But let's get back to the topic here. Let's get back to how the synchronistic events that tie into these cathartic, revelatory videos that Bill Brockbrader just made, right? So he came out of jail. He spent like 5 or so months kind of floating around, and now he's made the videos. Now he's in hiding, right? So the videos are good. I thought they were great. I thought they tied into a lot of the esoteric material that I sift through on a regular basis, plus also the esoteric material that I experientially encounter through my own personal relationships as well. Just the history of my thing. But for the most part, you know, I found them to be, you know, just the story of his recent experiences, right?
Let me cut in here too, because I wanted to say that you can get those videos on YouTube.
Yes.
And they're called Bill Brockbrader, Goodbyes.
No, it's Goodbye One, Main One.
Goodbye One, Main One. Yeah.
Goodbyes, and it's under the Earth, Susie Woozy.
And Earth History and Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
And how to help.
So there's 5 of them.
Yes. And I think there's 5. One of them is. I think there's 5. That's all I've watched. If there's another one, I was not aware of that one. I know that when I watch these and I watch them and I listen to them. I had some amazing transformations and some, you know, portals kind of open up. And I have lots of boxes that are unopened at this point in my life, you know, missing time, that kind of things, because of the things that happened to me when I was young. So I had a lot of portals start to open up in ways that were kind of they were the missing pieces for me in a lot of ways, and it was through the things that Bill talked about in the videos about watching Interstellar, the movie, reading The Law of One, things that kind of brought me to disclosure about events in my life that did not make sense, but now they make sense. And I think that for the average person, I think they're going to find some value in just watching them with an open mind, and or, you know, not even watching, if you just want to listen. He has a certain frequency that kind of gets you on the path to where we have to be.
He's truthful. He's being honest.
He is being truthful.
He's just being truthful, which runs contrary to his training. Okay, so he's broken his training by just being
he's
a regular person.
He's out of his programming. He's no longer oppressed. He is not a slave, which you and I both. I think you feel you're not a slave. I feel I'm not a slave, definitely. That's huge. It's huge to kind of be able to be free, and truth got me there.
What we got to understand is that it's the rabbit hole is quite deep. You know, I mean, it's not like, I'm out of it now. It just keeps going on and on. There's layers and layers
and
layers.
Yeah, it does. Layers and layers.
And like you and me, we're at least recognized. I mean, imagine a person who never hasn't recognized it once. So this is where we can talk about, you know, these, you know, how to recognize a flat earther, a mind control slave, an unpaid, you know, a troll shill within your own group, within your own family, within your own friends, within, you know, just a regular person walking on the street. And they're not even aware of it. These are the people that, you know, will pipe in with their comments on anything on the internet that are usually emotionally laden and, you know, ill-researched, but they're absolutely, attacking anything that destroys the belief system paradigm of feeding the system.
Can I say this here, right here? I just wanted to say that they exhibit a certain kind of behavior for people that might be unaware of it. And part of their behavior is to ask questions, and then when you respond, there's no response. There's just more questions. So you never get to any kind of settlement.
They're not that smart. That's actually technique. That's called the Delphi technique.
Yeah, that's
practiced by these stupid fox.
Yeah.
They think they're so smart. They're like, why don't you want to give us your last name? You know, it's like, this is dumb.
Stupid. Yeah.
It's like, and the next thing you know, you're in jail, right?
Doing nothing. Exactly. Yeah. But I think for most people, they don't get that behavior is actually a made up personality psychological
training these days. Right?
I mean, that's the deal, right? But like I said, most people don't realize that when that happens, that's what's going on there. That's a programmed person. That's programmed, okay?
Right, and of course,
so you have to deal with them differently.
Those are the guys that are actually paid to be programmers. The ones that are unpaid are the ones that we're trying to focus on here. The unpaid ones,
that's true.
Yeah, and they don't know. They're piping in to support this monster, the system, the dying, system, without even getting paid. And these are, the greatest asset to this system of domination control. But if you know these people, you can usually trace some kind of event, which would be something like, they're usually on some kind of drugs, like antidepressants, that type of thing. They're they're compromised in a way that they feel that without the system they would die. Whereas I don't feel that at all. Like, I can go into the bush, I can live in my car, I can live on the road in my van. I mean, I don't feel like that. I feel free, right? I can, you know.
I feel like I make it happen, which is what I do right now, which is what I've been doing forever. So, you know, it's, I just make it happen.
You know,
it's
like, people, they don't have guts because they've been, you know, trained out of them. And then, so they have... Anyway, I have a perfect example. So part of this show is supposed to be synchronicities in our own lives paralleling this, Bill's videos, right? And I would like to just comment more on them, that, there's been many people like Bill throughout history that have gone against the system, that have, disappeared intentionally, some unintentionally, right? Suicided, whatever, but never got a chance to say their goodbyes. So, you know, this time we're in now and the support group around Bill and the fact that there is an internet with relative, you know, ease, freedom still, is a really, you know, positive thing for Bill. Because there's, you know, there's been a lot of people like Bill in the past and right now, he's not the only one, right? And, you know, for the most part, you know, his experiences are can be paralleled through so many other people's experiences in so many different avenues of life. What I see with what he endured, that, you know, there's an emotional appeal with his videos, and also, you know, with Ava Moore as well, that you know, this is wrong, this is bad, it shouldn't be happening. Well, yeah, right, but you know, a lot of people have swallowed this, you know, massive ball of shit their whole lives too. I mean, a lot of people have been put through hell for so many different reasons, from government screwing up their whole lives. There's a guy right here. Oh, it's just one story after another, right? So, it's not just them, right? So, this little sort of whirlwind cyclone around their personal experiences, their relationship, and their drama is their drama, is their karma acting out, as well as you know, real direct action things that you have to give both of them credit for doing. You know, Ava did a lot of great work to support Bill, and Bill did a lot of great work to support his belief that as a soldier he's here to help people and protect his citizens. He just did the right thing in his heart, right? Well, you know, a lot of people do that. So that, you know, hats off to them for that. But a lot of what's going on around them is just their own personal dramas, right? And that can happen to anyone. And I think what's happened now with Bill, in my own interpretation, is that, you know, it's time to cut the karma. You know, cut the karma, right? I had to do that in my own life recently. I kind of kept control of things for quite a while, but I got so bored. And then I just went, 2006, I started raw traveling, and I went traveling, and I just sold 90% of my possessions, bought a motorhome, and then things changed a lot. I invited anything to come into my life through... just being a gypsy and many other things. I also got my business during that time. I really turned my life around. But I also noticed that I had these really calamitous events that would happen with people that didn't happen in my other life, just because I was sort of in a secondary position, being like a guest or a, you know, tourist, you know, and then that would create, all of a sudden I'd have these karmic events explode in my face that I never had before, that made me like embarrassed, humiliated, all kinds of crap, right? Abused. And that's what I see happening there. So as now the raw traveling is over, I'm grounding, I'm planting a flag, I'm, you know, doing that. I won't let the karma happen. I shut it down all the time, and I think that's what Bill is doing now. It's like I've had enough of it, right? It is all related to past life. It's there for anyone to just you know, whip up at any moment. And all these unconscious people around you, that's all they're trying to do, to validate their unconscious selves and, you know, feed the system, because they don't understand what their true purpose is, because they've been made to feel that it is, you know, of no value to pursue their own purpose. Okay, over to you.
or to live in your intuition. I mean, I have amazing intuition, and when I say, oh, I need to do this, and they go, oh, no, you need to do this, and then I follow that, it's bad, it's just totally bad. And if you've got people in your life that are always saying, you can't do that, after a while you start to listen to them, and then you realize that you're just kind of living there. You're living their life and not your own, and you're letting them, and you're just like taking it on. You're like, it's okay. You're saying it's okay. We have to do what we have to do for our intuition, because that's the thing that actually points us where we need to be, so we can get up in frequency here, because the earth is changing. The frequency of the earth is changing, and other people are just not with the frequency flow that the earth is at this point, and it creates a lot of anxiety and tension. I mean, I know as an empath, I feel it all the time in people around me.
Exactly. But that's when you stand up and you just, you know, let your truth be told.
Well, and that's what,
and then, you know, let them deal with you instead of you dealing with them, right?
Well, and I have this kind of effect on people where I can kind of make the room joyous, and that is really valuable, and you know, some people might call that manipulation, but I prefer to call it making things more comfortable for myself. That's what I prefer to call it. So, and it actually works. It works great, and people like to be around me and want to touch me and stuff all the time. So,
well, in the future, we'll actually, you know, quantify these characteristics and qualities in each other and give them value and, you know, promote them, and that will be their job, right?
Right. Well, and I find that in the people that know me, it's like they understand that this kind of is my job. They understand that. And that, because I've told them myself, that I'm in service
the right side of history, the people that are going to go through this shift, the people that are going to, you know, be able to separate the densities, as Andrew Bartz has quite correctly coined it. These are densities that are going on around. So you jump into this. It's like, you know, these circular arguments that you get in with people that go nowhere based on this crazy emotionalism that really has no logic, that's part of, you know, it's the system food, it's the loosh that the, you know, at the lower levels that keep the mind control in mind control, right? Because so many people just can't break through it, even if they, you know, it's cognitive dissonance. You know, I don't know how many Americans I met in Mexico that, you know, were relatively intelligent, nice, sane, but as soon as you mentioned 911, it was a bunch of Muslims with box cutters that did it. You know?
I know. How does that even go? Oh, I don't know. I don't understand.
And
people buy that. People buy it. I don't understand. I know what I saw, and I'm telling you that there were no box cutters involved when I was watching those buildings fall on TV. No freaking planes would make those buildings fall. Sorry. I saw it the first day. I saw it. I was screaming out. Oh, my gosh.
I knew it, too. I mean, I've been aware.
Yeah.
I can't trace a moment when I woke up. But because of my history, I've always been aware. I might not have been aware of the whole picture. Of course I wasn't, but that's what drove me to seek the truth and became, you know, an esoteric studier of esoteric matters, you know.
Well, you know, I've been an activist for a really long time, and actually I was calling the White House, you know, way back in the early 80s. Actually, and so they actually got to know me by my, you know, my last name, because I would call them up and complain, and You know, so it was kind of weird that here I was doing all this and other people weren't even noticing what I was noticing, and I was just like, what's wrong with you people? Why don't you notice this?
Right. Yeah, I have to deal with one the other day at the license renewal place, and I just said, well, you know, the tolls are illegal. She goes, I don't care. There's nothing I can do about it anyway. You know, just like a total, like, oh, my God. Okay. And I'm like, yeah, all right. Yeah, sure. Okay, yeah. The girl beside her was like, man. Really? You know, but she wasn't, right? So then we got this, you know, and this dichotomy in our society right now. And so a lot of these people will not be on board. They won't. You know, they will not be, commenting on the new thing. And, you know, you have to be with these, call it whatever, ideas, right. Any upgrades. You have to be along with this process. I mean, it can happen instantaneously, but it's actually more of a process. It can't really doesn't happen instantaneously. It takes time for your busy biomechanical skin suit to
adapt
to sort it out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
To make sense of it. So you know, so if you're still taking the drugs, if you're still, and I'm not saying that people taking these drugs cannot get on board. I believe it's more of an intention and a heart mindset than anything else. I really do. I always believe that. If you want to be there, you will, right? And I think about my sister who's on all these drugs, and I, you know, kind of want to help her, but I don't want to, you know, dive into this bullshit. You know, I think about her, like, maybe she's coming, right? I don't know. Maybe she is, even beyond the drugs, because she's not half as bad. As, you know, the only troll in my whole network is an old friend of mine from high school, right? She's not even as bad as her, right? In terms of her, you know, open-mindedness, right? And my sister's on, like, three times as many more meds than her. So it doesn't really, who knows who will be on board. But I think we can now clearly see, you know, these separation of densities and these separations of, you know, and so when we're in them, and now I can try, you know, move it back into this Bill.
Well, I think I wanted to. I'd like to interject here about the work that I've been doing with Luz Aguabarena. She's got. She's on.
Hi, Luz. Yeah, and I thank Luz. Luz has been an awesome resource in my life, an awesome friend, person. I've just totally.
She's the mother I never had. That's who she is, and she's my partner and my mentor, and I don't even know what wonderful things I can say. She's helped me so much in my progression and in my procession and in my transformation, and
she's an awesome.
Yes, and she's opened portals for me that I needed to have open when I was.
She's held a lot of space during this Bill.
Yes, held a lot of space.
Let's give her that credit, okay?
She has absolutely held a lot of space.
And I
need to say that, you know, what she always says about the virus of the mind, because that's exactly what this is. And I've been reading these books lately, it's being said in each one of these books in a completely different way, but it really boils down to this virus of the mind, which we have been inoculated with, since before, I believe, the 40s. With the projects that they unveiled, the Nazis unveiled, which is part of this, you know, MK Ultra, the Project Bluebird, and we are the product of those programs. So the active word there is program. Every single one of us. And until we all kind of get on board that this is something that they're watching. That's why there's targeted individuals. This is something that they want to know what your medical records are and how it goes. They're tracking everybody. We're already chipped with our phones. We don't have to have the chip put inside our bodies because they're already spraying that on top of us in the air through the chemtrails. So it's important that in order to like turn this whole thing around is to kind of accept the idea that, yeah, we're being targeted, but we do not consent to this. We do not consent. I do not consent. I don't consent for anyone that I know, or the planet, or any of the animals, or the trees, or the flowers. I don't like the fact that my sunset doesn't look the way it used to. I do not consent to that. I want my old sunsets back. And we just need to be like energetically saying that all the time when there's something going on and you're noticing that, this is just not right. You know when it's not right. So start saying, this is not right and I do not consent.
You've got to have the will. I mean, if your whole life is dependent on consenting, well, what's the point in not consenting when you're comfortable not consenting? You know what I mean?
Well, I get
that.
That's
a large portion of the large portion of the population.
Well, and I try to get it across. I just had a conversation with a National Guard troop. That he's a reservist. He was just talking to me and he was really upset about the fact that he signed up for this and now they're telling him he's going to have to do things he doesn't want to do. He says, yeah. I didn't sign up for that, right? Well, you know, he never said out loud what it was that he didn't sign up for, but I know exactly by his energetic frequency when he was talking to me that it was about firing on American citizens.
Okay.
So, yes. So, that energy
he can be the next hero. I mean, Bill's a hero, I'm a hero,
well,
you're a hero.
Well,
you're going to have a hero of heroes.
He said, I'm not going to do what they want me to do. That's what he said.
Right.
I'm not going to do. He said, and none of the guys I'm with are going to do it either.
Up.
Is that, you know? Yeah. So, right. Essentially, the energy's already there that if something starts to happen, these our sons and daughters are going to say, I'm not going to do that, sorry, right? And that's a huge I do not consent, and that's very... This guy was not being secretive about talking about this, which is awesome because it makes people aware that these things are being talked about in the armed forces, which a lot of people are just totally clueless about, and they seem to think that this is all... I mean, it is a smoke and mirrors.
Don't talk about it. That's all the feeding the fear, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is, and that's it exactly. And you know, and part of the part of curing the virus of the mind is to realize that pretty much everything that is in this matrix is planned for you. It's been planned. It's been planned for all of us. And we only have to stand back and say we're not going to be part of this. We're not going to. I'm getting cured of the virus of the mind. I'm in the hawk mindset now, and I've done the seven pillars, which has brought me self responsibility, clarity, and it has totally cured me of any addiction that I had in my life. And that's one of the many ways. You know, I mean, I brought all these amazing things into my life, like shungite and crystals opened up the doors to another way of thinking and perception and existence. And it's affected my health in a very positive way. It's affected everything in a very positive way. So this is not something that people need to be afraid of. Because it feels wonderful here, and I'm just, you know, I'm like standing around going, why? I'm happy all the time.
It's natural life. It's natural life. It's natural living, and that's all we had before.
Yes.
But we, and that's all we have now. So we must, you know, identify these, you know, negative forces as just always trying to interject, as like, you know, Aries, like ramming through. It's not the prevailing. Sorry, drop my headset. Give me a second here. It's not the prevailing. Truth. It's not the prevailing reality. It's always trying to impose itself on, you know, the natural order, the natural harmony of the universe. And so we're mistakenly believing that it is the way things are, but it's not. The way things are is quite peaceful and harmonious. Most people get along. I mean, certainly, you know, there's not too much, although there's some, you know, distractions on the street, fighting and stuff. But, you know, for the most part, in North America, we all get along with each other. Just decay of society is you can usually trace it back to some intentional plot to...
Yes,
manufactured, exactly. Yeah, totally. So,
yeah, it is. Yeah. It's all manufactured, you know.
That's right.
That's why it's so hard for me to stand back and go, don't you know that this is all just a play for you? And you're like just jumping right in, but they're not even paying you, dude. It's like, you gotta
figure out. I really want to make that clear. I'm in there right now with the comments on, you know, the major news sites here in Canada. It's like, like troll show. I hope you're getting paid, you know, because, you know,
exactly.
Mind control ones that don't get paid.
I hope so.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, you know, I've had enough. It's like,
geez. Yeah, it's like that car that stopped in front of me, man. He freaking had a brand new car. He stopped right in front of me and on a yellow light, stopped flat out in front of me. I had a witness and everything. The cops were just like, I told him, I said, this guy is a gang stalker. He stopped in the crosswalk on a yellow light right in front of me, locked him up in front of me. And the witness says, yep, that's what I saw. She gave a written statement to the cops.
You rear-ended him. Is that what happened?
I rear-ended him, yeah. He stopped right in front of me. There was no way to stop. I mean, he was like, I was going the speed limit, and if he had continued through the light, he stopped in the crosswalk, slammed on his brakes, and I ran into him and slid into him, actually, because it was raining, you know. But it was like,
unfortunately,
yeah.
According to insurance, it's still your fault.
It's still my fault, that's right.
Yeah.
But when I said something to the officer about it, I said, you know, I said, this was a gang stalking accident. I said, look, he's even got a new car. And they both looked down and to the side, you know, they're like, whoa. And then, you know, because I have all these angels that show up in my life, all these white hat people that show up when things like this happen to me.
Yes,
they just come for me, and I'm just like, oh, man, thank you, universe, man. And the witness told the cops, you know, before they even talked to me that she saw the entire thing, and he slammed on his brakes purposely. He looked in the mirror, and he slammed on his brakes, and she came back around to tell them that, you know, he did this on purpose.
In that case, if you have a witness, then that isn't a open and shut case. That's the 5% that, you know, most rear-enders are the rear-endee's fault. But I've actually gotten out one of those before by appealing it. I would fight that then.
I did.
I fought it.
Anyway,
yeah, we can talk about this on the show.
I did fight it, but I need to. That's kind of the deal, though. The deal was that when I talked to the insurance company on the recording, I made it clear to them that this was a gang stalking accident and that they should drop that guy because that was a brand new car and he stopped purposely in front of me and I have a witness to state that, and I gave my name and the phone number of the witness so that they could confirm that, and if they actually pursue me then they are actually breaking a law. They are breaking like several laws, and I can sue them each individually plus the company. So I made that really clear to all of them before I got off the line while we were still in the recording. So they really haven't come back at me over all of this because the cops were like, they didn't even take a report because of this situation. They weren't even going to make a report on me. And essentially I was the one that ran into the back of him, but they were like, you know, we're not even doing this. So they just walked away.
There's no police report?
No, none. They didn't take a report.
He didn't stop for a person at the crosswalk.
The deal was that it wasn't even red. Okay, it had just turned yellow as he got like his ass end was in the middle of the crosswalk when he stopped. So he started stopping way before he got, you know, to the crosswalk.
Was it a crosswalk?
You know, he slammed on his brakes. It was an intersection with the crosswalk, but he was in the crosswalk when I hit him. He stopped in the crosswalk on it, and it had just changed from green to yellow. So he intentionally stopped right in front of me, and that's what the witness saw and stated to me, and to him too. You know, she told him, she said, "You stopped right in front of her on purpose."
Good.
You know, that's what she said to him.
Well, people need to know that personal testimony is evidence. A lot of people think it's not. They're brainwashed.
Well, and that's the deal.
That's not, but it is.
That's personal testimony is evidence. So that's kind of it is. And that's what I was making it clear on the phone when I was talking, you know, on the recording. I was stating all the things that I know about the law. Okay.
Even though it's a false freaking system
we have, I know what the law is. So it's like, you know, you guys have to follow the law, or I can essentially hold you liable. So I say that to everybody. I say it to bill collectors online. I say, "What's your name? What kind of house you live in?"
Maybe
I'd like that house.
Maybe I'd like that house.
Yeah, you like your house?
Right. That's exactly what you have to do. How dare anyone? Who cares if they're undercover of their employer?
It doesn't matter.
You know, try to, you know, destroy someone's life. How dare they?
And they're finding out
that
they're actually, you know, they're finding out that what I'm saying is true. Because they're going, "Whoa, I didn't know that," right? And they're going home because they don't want to lose their house, right? So they can start changing what they're saying to people on the phone, even though it may not be company policy, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, that's how I talk to people on the phone now.
I live outside of it as much as I can.
Well, I do too, but you still have.
I think there's also an air of they kind of get to know you in the system that you are a non-consenter, and there's a bit of a hands-off approach, you know, to me.
Well,
Like, "Oh, don't just leave her alone, you know. Oh, geez,
don't ruffle her feathers because
Right.
That's kind of.
I don't have anything to lose. I don't have kids. I don't have a house. I don't have a huge bank account. I got nothing to lose, right? So I can just, you know, ramrod into the system with all frickin' guns blazing, not giving a shit, right? But if I have something to lose, like a career, you know, in the military, something, you know, like that, or a house and a family and all that, I might, you know, be different. But I was never that stupid, you know, to tell you the truth. You know, that's basically, I chose to do what I was doing when I was a child. I chose to be a photographer. I could have been a politician. I knew that. I could have been. But I chose to be an artist because I believed that I would have more power and more effect. And I believe it's true. I think I made the right decision because, well, we all know what it's like to be in politics. I mean, maybe there's the odd good person, but even still, you know, I don't have a, you know, lily white background. I'm a artist. I've been, like, involved in all kinds of shit storms and all kinds of things that, you know, I like to party, I like to have a good time, I like to swear, I don't want to be regulated like that at all. So I don't care, I just want to do my own thing.
That's what people say to me, "Oh, aren't you going to retire?" I said, "I am retired. I do whatever I want."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, when I
want
to do it, you know, it's like, you know, I sleep 4 hours at night, maybe, and I do all kinds of different things. I read, I make things, I talk to people, I help people, I sing, I do all these great things all the time, and it's like, and that, I guess, isn't that what, you know, that's what being in your sole purpose is about, is that's being retired, if you ask me, because I'm retired from the Matrix. So that's really what they're saying when they say, "Aren't you going to retire?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, I'm not, I've been out of the Matrix for a long time, so, You know, right. I don't even know what day it is. What day is it, by the way?
That's right. But we're not just sitting idly by, you know, drinking pina coladas on the beach, right? We have a sense of responsibility. I think this is one of the symptoms of being one of these resistors to the system, like Bill is, you know, and like I was as a child. You know, it's that you feel a responsibility to the world at large, to the, you know, to everyone else, to so that it will not continue for anyone else. I mean, I chose not to have a family because I didn't want anything to continue through my bloodline that had happened in my family. And there would have been a large possibility that there would have been, and God knows how much my children could have or would have been targeted. I don't know, you know, but certainly, you know, there's, you know, because of my dysfunctional parents, I really didn't want them as grandparents, really. Just that alone.
Right. Yeah. It's like,
I'm able to just, you know, shoot my arrow to the moon or to the stars and not worry about the star trail where it falls. It's just my life, and that's my purpose, and I'm able to carry on my purpose, and that's it. Most people, their purpose is with their family, but for me, it's to help the world. That's just what it is, right? I do my own thing. I'm consumed with my own business most of the time, but I grant myself many hours of the day actually absorbing material that I'm just plain interested in. And even my social media sites that are supposed to be about my business, they're like 90% it's all freaking activism. Because I don't care. No, if I could fire myself, I would, you know, but I can't. I'm my own boss, right? And if you don't like me, well then defriend me. I don't care, right? So it's just the way it is. People have these ideas that media is controlling them, but, you know, media is, you know, it's there for you to control, if you have the wherewithal or the guts to do it. But most people are just, you know, dead fish flowing with the stream. And they believe that there is, you know, a benevolent cause to it all. If they believed otherwise, then their whole world would crumble and they would, you know, lose sanity. So those are the flat earthers. Those are the people that are walking around discrediting the rest of us. And I'm quite frankly tired of it, because they're slowing up the progress of liberation for the planet, for the rest of us. And, you know, honestly, that is a crime. I'm just going to call it what it is. It is time. Like, I don't know how much longer I'm supposed to hold on for, you know, meatball, sub-eating, you know, psychotropic drug-popping, you know, television watching, you know, redneck to get it. I'm supporting that by, you know, so it's time, direct action. Am I being heard?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I just had an odd feeling. Okay. So, that's what I feel. We're at that stage. It's okay. The universe has said, fine, good, go ahead. Nothing's going to stop you. So we all have the green light for this. It's just our own fear mechanisms that are, you know, holding it back. And I can testify in my own life for that, because I'm in a situation now that mirrors, I could have so have been attacked by my neighbors, but I haven't been, simply because, you know, I'm planting the flag, telling everyone unequivocally I'm not here to get involved in any drama. I'm here for my own purposes, to do my own business, right? So, and people get that, but God knows they will, you know, try anything to, you know, whip up the drama. Because the people that are doing that the most are the ones that are dependent on the system, on some kind of disability or, dependent, right? So it takes an awareness through the heart, the heart-mind connection, to see through that. And if And most people haven't. And if you can't appeal to a person through that, then you know that those people that are not appealing through the heart will continue to stick on their thing. They're not going to appeal to the heart-mind connection. You know, they're done. They're finished. They're on the other side of it. They're on the, it's the separation of densities right there. There's nothing you can do. Don't
right. And I wanted to say too that, you know, it's like we have a choice to whether we want to like kind of tune into that or not. You know, we have and make an investment. And we're going to go to a break here.
Your neighbor, you don't have a choice. You have to deal with it, right?
Yeah, we're going to go to a break here, and then we'll come back and we'll have some more interesting conversation. And hopefully JP will join us, which would really be nice because we could get the third triad here. And see where that goes, right? Yeah. So we'll be right back. Thanks
okay.
for listening. So hello, we're back. We all took a little break, and we're ready to jump right back in here again, and hopefully JP will add some
there
things
you go.
To our conversation.
There was a song for you. Pull up to the bumper.
Oh, yeah. Pull up to the bumper, baby.
Pull up to the bumper, baby. That's the deal. I like that.
I love punk. It's one of my favorites.
Me too. I like to dance. I'm a big dancer. So,
yeah.
And I'm a joyous person, man. That's me. I'm happy all the time. There's situations going on, and I'm happy all the time because that's what I choose to be. There's no point in being any other way because... it doesn't get you to the solution faster, being frustrated and angry and sad and all those things.
Yeah.
I don't spend much time there.
I spent a large portion of my younger days being very frustrated. And if I wasn't frustrated, I thought I should have been somewhere else. It's been a long road to actually feel like I'm doing and being what I should be doing and where I should be doing it, you know. It's but I'm here, so it's possible, you know, for me, a person like me. Other people may not have that inclination, or they just accept their own, you know, displacement as a fact of life. I don't know. But, yeah, so what should we talk about now, Laura?
Well, I think that... I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the amazing things that I've had happen that were just kind of totally out of the ordinary experiences for me. That some of this information that I've been getting, and I'm avid reader. I probably read, you know, 7 books a week or more, and I read about all kinds of different things. So, you know, I have a varied knowledge, and then of course I have experience from way back about aliens and really who we are, where we're from, and kind of what our purpose is too. And I have a lot of memories now that are coming back that kind of confirm all the things that were given to me in many other ways. So there's this like patchwork quilt that's happening. And because I used to be a quilter, it's a quilt for me. So other people, it can be whatever, right? Whatever they want to make it.
Well, that is happening
but
to
I was
a
on
lot
the beach.
Of people.
It is. Now, I was on the beach yesterday with my son, and we were walking down the beach, and I'm like really into heart rocks, right? So, so I'm picking some up, you know, and my son's like, you know, Mom, you can't pick up all the heart rocks. And he said, and if you do, then there'll be none for anybody else. And I said, well, there's so many. I said, there's just so many, right? So then I got thinking about that, and I was like, he's right. I just can't haul all these heart rocks back to the house all the time, right? And so I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to start taking pictures of these heart rocks, right? So I'm going to have a heart rock blog of other people going out. Hopefully you guys will go out and start taking pictures of heart rocks, because you'll notice if you look down more at the ground that there's all these heart rocks down there, and these are really powerful rocks. And I give them to people. I'll be walking down the beach and I'll look at somebody and I'll say, oh, this guy needs a heart rock for sure. So I'll hand it to him, you know, and it always brightens their day. I mean, it's a rock I picked up off the beach, but they're like, you don't even know how much I needed this. Right.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, how powerful is that? Right. So, so, you know, so to keep all the heart rocks from disappearing, let's take pictures of heart rocks and heart shapes, right? I mean, it can go for buildings or whatever, because you're going to see, once you start to notice the heart-shaped things, you're going to notice them everywhere. And that's really a powerful thing, because once you start to notice, you start to get in synchronicity, which is part of the title of this show tonight. And you're going to start seeing amazing things happen in your life, because there's this kind of energy that starts to flow. So, I mean, I'm excited about the heart rocks. I'm really excited about it. And my son's just like, he said, that's brilliant, Mom. And I was like, not really. I just said, I get what you said about me, you know, carrying all these heart rocks around or taking them home and stuff, and other people can't see them, right? So, you know, so I said, well, I could take pictures of all these heart rocks. And I actually went down the beach yesterday and I took about 40 pictures. And I only went maybe probably a distance of 400 feet on the beach and took that many heart rock pictures. So there is no way that I would be able to carry all those heart rocks away with me. There's no way. But they were all beautiful, and they all had their own separate shapes and colors. And some looked like actual hearts, and some looked like just the regular heart shape that we see for Valentine's. But I mean, it's such a universal shape, and here it is in everything, and there's a reason that it's in everything, this shape, because it holds an amazing amount of power, and if we live in our heart, then...
Well, I'm going to jump in right there, because I think I'd like to talk about the differences between people. People were all different, and it causes so many people to judge each other because of the differences, when really they're just different choices we've made for our perceptions, and perhaps could facilitate our purposes here. So one of these, and I'm going to credit Shepherd Hoodwin. He's a channeler for this entity called Michael. And started in the 60s in California through these messages from Michael books and a group of people. So Chelsea Quinn Yarborough wrote the first book. And then now there's several channelers that channel this entity, which is apparently all grouped on the causal plane, which is the fifth dimension. He wrote a book called Journey of the Soul, or The Soul's Journey, something like that. Shepherd Hoodwin. And this is a very... detailed mathematical understanding of our choices and our souls as we enter into this cycle of life and death from the Tao, you know. And each grand cycle is explained, but also each individual lifetime is explained. So what I got from my reading is that I am a seventh level old priest. Right? So that explains that I'm at the end of my cycle, at the end of this cycle. I don't want any more bullshit, except all I get is bullshit, because that often happens at your last life. You just get, like, all the bullshit, because you get it clear, 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 right? But at the same time, you're gonna do your thing. You're gonna, you know, hopefully, right? You don't want to come back again. You want to get this right, right? So that's apparently where I'm at. And so getting this reading these books, it's the best psychology. It's better than any psychology book I've ever read. It's better than astrology in analyzing human behavior and where people are at. So there's so much to learn there that I just wanted to interject with that, because that, even me, I just read it a couple of years ago. It's like, oh my God, I've been so arrogant or, you know, pushy with my beliefs and thinking, well, you should do this, you should do that, because maybe I should have done it, but it's not someone else's business to do that. And so people, you know, are always doing that to each other, thinking the other one's crazy because they're just, you know, of a completely different attitude, goal, soul type, you know? So I just wanted to interject with that, that that's a huge learning tool that I picked up that helps me immensely with differentiating between what was going on with different people.
Yeah, it's like who's sociopaths and who's not. I mean, I didn't actually realize that I had a lot of sociopaths always attached to me or wanting to be close to me, and that they were doing me a great amount of harm because
I
didn't realize.
About that too.
I didn't realize that they were actually, you know, that I knew their frequency, but I didn't understand, you know, the whole idea of them. And then all of a sudden, Luz sent me an article and I read it, and after that I was just like, oh my gosh, now I have so many sociopaths that are my friends, and they don't manipulate me now because I figured out how to talk to them and kind of get things around to their way of thinking. But it's actually, you know, what my plan was for the whole situation. So it's, and I, they, people might say that's manipulation, but it, actually it works out really well because everybody's useful.
Everybody's useful. A negative word. It really just means.
No, it's not a negative word, because in this, because in this sense, it's, you know, it's actually teaching them how to behave is really what it is. It's a behavior modification, and because my behavior is different towards them, they have to modify their behavior. So, and this happens kind of organically when I started to do and live the seven pillars, you know, which is, you know, making sure I'm in the truth, and that I'm acknowledging my truth, but my truth is also different than everybody else's truth, and their truth is their truth, but it may not be my truth. But I still have to acknowledge it. You know, I have to claim the errors, you know. I have to claim my errors and then kind of, you know, I don't forgive. I just acknowledge that there were errors made. What energy is useful in that whole scenario, that energy I will keep, and the rest I don't consent to, and I can throw it away. Right.
Yeah.
And I want to be out of judgment.
Yeah.
Right. I want to be out of judgment and not judging people because their experience is different than my experience and their knowledge is different because of that. So
the
I can't be judging somebody.
A different point on the path. Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But if I'm pointing my fingers and saying, oh, it's just because you're stupid and you don't know. I'm missing the point here because every opportunity is an opportunity to educate. Every single opportunity. And if I'm saying, oh, you're just stupid and you don't understand, then I'm gonna miss that opportunity, to say, hey, how about if we look at it this way, which is different than how you're looking at
it
right now.
I often thank people for showing me, you know, that they are psychopaths, or that they are, you know, dead fish,
yes.
Or that they are flat earthers. It's like, thanks.
Me
I don't
too.
Have to waste any more time
just,
to you. I don't have to pretend I like you.
Right.
Thank you, you know.
Yeah, I just laugh. Yeah. I just go, really, okay, is that how you really play the game? And then they go, what?
Right,
and I just kind of laugh at it, right?
Yeah,
and then they're like, oh, okay, she's cool, she understands me, right? That's the deal. They feel good after that, because then they think, oh, okay, she gets it. So then they also know that they can't manipulate you, right? So it's kind of like frees up the whole relationship right off. That's what I'm finding anyway, and I'm just like, wow, I'm just,
it's
working.
Well, this is the synchronicity thing in my life that has to do with my old friend from high school who, you know, is the only troll on my Facebook page. I actually discarded my profile last year or 2 years ago because I wanted to get rid of the friends I had. Some of them I felt were, you know, not representative of what I really wanted to use Facebook for. You know, basically flat earthers, whatever. It's like I don't care. I don't want you to pipe in. It's my Facebook page. I cut it off and I started a new one. But she stayed, she's not part of my friends anymore. But then she stayed on my fan page for my business. And, oh, she freaking chimed in on that with some, you know, anti-vaccine debate, which was my post, anti-vaccine. And then her, like, rock-solid testimony of, you know, denouncing something, you know, wasn't rock-solid at all, but just, you know, her belief, her opinion, that sounded, you know, altruistic and, you know, final. So, you know, I thought, you know, Jesus, I had like a, I wrote her a letter, actually, through Facebook privately, and I'm like, you know, this friend of mine, she's had several personal shadows. She's been on antidepressants her whole life. She's self-diagnosed. She even went to a psychiatrist who told her there was nothing wrong with her, and she got upset with him. I mean, most people would be happy, right? But no, she was like, this guy, I'm crazy. Like, it's just, anyway. So that was my, and oddly enough, she modeled herself after my mother. And likes to think of herself as some kind of authority on issues of depression, mental illness. SIDS is another one. Her son died of SIDS, you know, unfortunate, which drove her further into depression. And whatever other topic, you know. And so she even told me that she was snitching on this woman who was doing some protocol with her autistic son, CD autism, which I believe is chlorine dioxide autism. I wasn't even aware of it because I was a health activist. I still am marginally, but that work was derailed, and that's fine. I'm really focusing on my personal business and whatever else that it is, which is politics, honestly, and this esoteric talk. So she... this is funny because I just finally confronted her, and I've been her friend for so many years, and just sympathetic ear, and we never really, you know, talked about our beliefs. I mean, I didn't know she didn't know I was a radical activist. I didn't think it mattered, but I didn't know she was so, you know, head in the sand. But you know, everyone else in my circles, you know, just kind of let me talk. It's whatever, and it's the agree to disagree, and polite, you know, but not her. And who is this? My oldest friend, right? So this is an odd example of that, but it really allowed me to separate this actual program out of my, you know, core DNA. And that's what I've been doing in the last 10 months, well, 6 months here over the winter as well, not making any overt move or aggressive move or ambitious move, which I've been known to do many times, just letting things happen on their own, just only doing something when it is absolutely clear that it's now time to do it, so that I don't over-function. And, you know, like I've been known to do, lose money. And I mean, I've been moving around like crazy for years because of this decision I made, which is great, but now it's time to settle down. So, you know, I've had to deal with my neighbors. One of them, which is part of the synchronistic thing here going on, is named Bill. And he has had quite the life in jail and fight gangs, the whole bit. And he's now just trying to live. I don't know what he's really trying to do. He doesn't seem to have any goals. He just likes to drink beer, smoke cigarettes, and watch TV. But, you know, I just, he would, you know, he's so, obviously he has so many negative entity attachments, and he can be so easily manipulated. But at the same time, the guy has a heart-mind connection, and he's a heart-based person. I'm actually physically based, but most people are intellectually or heart-based, and then the others are physical. And that's part of the teachings that I learned from this Michael stuff, so I wanted to preface that first. So he's a heart-based person, and but he's been so, you know, damaged with so many of these influences through the system, prison system, and the drug system, and many things. So, plus his, you know, own code, whatever they have with the bike gangs, which is complete CIA. Let's get that out of the way. The bike gangs is not, yeah, not Sonny Bulger. He was a CIA op, right?
Yeah,
100%
exactly.
CIA, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't some
yeah.
freaking...
Yeah,
100% CIA.
It's just a good way for them to have these gangs running around, and they can blame the stuff on the gangs and not be, you know, pointing the finger at our actual government guys, right?
Exactly. That's it.
You know, I mean, that's the deal. So, but you know,
but
I mean, I don't mention that when I go in biker bars.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know, but I told my neighbor, I'm like, yeah, you know, that was a CIA up, right? You know, you believe that, I don't care. And he just kind of looks at me weird, whatever, but he's actually okay. But so what happened is that I slept in the winter in my studio, and it was, you know, very thin walls. And, you know, I basically, you know, had to energetically endure all of these things this guy was experiencing. You know, every week, at least once a week, it was like this, like fuck, something had happened. You know, it does it all the time. Frustration, just anyway. But it's more than that. It's whatever, you know, that TV constantly, which is programming, right? And whatever, every lowlife as well coming through. So, I mean, I know that there were, you know, I know about these entities. I know that all this stuff is attached to them. I mean, I did constant spiritual cleansing and clearing. My space is really clear. It's so funny. It's right beside his, the opposite. But I did not confront him. And in my past, I would have been so... just like, you're bad. Stop it. I like my rapes and you get, you know, whatever. But I didn't because, I accepted him. And, you know, we had our confrontations a few times. But I really didn't, make some overt gesture. It died right down immediately. Our fights diffused quite quickly. So, and we're friends now. But I remember lying on bed, looking at the ceiling, going, God, I feel like I'm trapped. It's like, I'm trapped. I know I'm trapped. And I knew I wasn't. I knew I could just leave any time because I know myself better. But I was in that way. And I didn't do anything to release it. The thing that released it was actually him. It was actually us, kind of me finally being nice to him or accepting him as an individual without getting sucked into this help Bill thing, which is everybody freaking does it around here. But Bill, it's just, he's got the, everyone tries to help him and then he doesn't change and then they get pissed off, right?
Right,
but
yeah.
And he's like, I never asked for your help, right? But that's just such an energetic thing. He doesn't realize that, yeah, he is asking for their help, and everyone's contracted here. I tried to stay out of it as much as possible, but finally, it was this release that I got to leave from sleeping here. In the studio, I wanted to for months. It was just a temporary thing, but it was just too convenient, and I didn't have the right call forward. Finally, it was him that said to me, the fire department's coming around. And I'm like, oh, well, I better freaking, you know, get out of there, right? So I got my, I moved my sleeping situation to another location, which is what I wanted anyway. It's just so much better, right? And so I'm free of that. I'm free of this dynamic that was a lock between him and I, with, you know, no, he would never understand it. I couldn't talk about it to anyone around here. I mean, I would, but they all look at me like I'm crazy. But it's free now. It's freed up. And that was just last week. Oh, that's this week. This week. It happened Wednesday. So it's an amazing feeling. And all of a sudden, he wants to move now, too. It's like, wow, this freedom, and I've got my freedom, but I haven't lost anything. I did it with a minimum of inconvenience, because my studio gallery is very well set up for my business and for what I do. You know, I'm a visual artist, and I I need my tools handy, and it's really good. I've really worked on it for 8 months, and it's an awesome place to do that stuff. So, you know, mm-hmm. There's no point in changing that right now unless something better comes along. But so that released that energy, and as I, you know, that whole thing is that feeling of like, wow, I'm trapped. This is weird. And you know, I knew it. I wasn't, but I didn't want to overtly do anything about it myself. I wanted to wait until it happened in an organic way, and it did. And I think it had something to do with, you know, obviously, you know, there's the mind programming, and the program is very strong in him and in his bloodline and his family lineage too, because they're all bikers. That it just had something, and of course, the program is strong in me, and plus the whole. Maybe the aversion to that, I don't know, but I dealt with it. I dealt with it by just letting it work itself out. And that's my synchronistic sort of events that I can sort of parallel to this other girl thing, which really, I don't know if it parallels with it at all. But, and then the other thing with my friend, which just caused me to separate. It's like separating. So I can separate now. My mother's influence on me, I always felt deeply sympathetic to her as a victim. But I see now that, well, there's more to it than that. And much more. And that, you know, a lot of her influence on me was extremely negative.
Yeah.
Through, maybe not consciously, but it turned out to be. And this is still representative in my life through my friend. She knew my mother, my friend from high school. So it allows me to see it in real time here now, and just call it out without judgment, without, you know, fear or any sort of like, you know, good, bad thing. Just see it and call it out and lay
right,
it down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How freeing is that? That's so freeing because
it's awesome. I feel like celebrating.
It is awesome. You know, and people are like, man, you're just, you know, I'm always like replaying the call. I'm replaying the conversation. I'm, you know, I'm always replaying because I want to get it right. And, you know, and that's how I learned to identify these frequencies that kind of are in my body and in my soul, in my DNA, really.
Yeah, the books.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, is this really mine? I mean, as I'm going down my DNA strand, I'm going, wait a minute, does this belong to me or does it belong to somebody else? And if it belongs to somebody else, then what's useful to me because I don't want it? I don't need it. It's holding me back. It's like causing a blockage right there, right?
Oh, and I had so much of that.
Yes.
So much.
Yeah. Well, and I think we all do. And part of the ability to get where you and I are, and JP and Nancy and Luz is to, and Bill, and even Eva, is to be able to just, you know, let this thing flow and not be afraid of it. Let's not be fearful.
Yeah. There's a willing engagement, obviously, of, you know, the group, surrounding the Bill and Eva.
Yes.
Thing,
well, and that's kind
right?
of the deal.
Willing engagement.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And,
And
so, you know, these are all triggers for so many.
They are
things.
Triggers, huge
right.
triggers.
But at the same time, there was a absolute forward movement with Heart-Mind Connection that did set off a timeline reality. And I'm not saying it's taking credit for all of it, because I think, you know, what often happens when people go through a tough time is that, you know, they track sympathy and and so, you know, this is wrong, everyone should be on my side. Well, there's fucking tons of that shit everywhere, right? And
right.
you know, there's so much of that. I got my own. I'm still trying to rectify my own past, and these people are dead. It's just me and my sister left, right? And my brother died when he was young. I mean, my sister went insane. I mean, you know, that's not a regular family, right?
No,
and,
it's not.
You know,
mine is either. It's like, what? And how many families are like that? That's what's interesting, is there's so many families like ours, you know?
Yeah.
And people
yes,
start talking about it.
There's a lot of them. Yeah. Well, they are. They're coming out of the closet because I've written several articles on this on my blog, and I've gotten several responses and from people going, "Yeah, my mother's the same, and I'm depressed, and we want remedy and resolve, but you know, I would like some frickin' paychecks as well. I don't know if that matters anymore, if that's how you do it, but I think I would like to, you know, for the compensation, but it's not just me. It's like, the native kids, it's all the people
It's all of them. I mean, think about that. I mean, I've lost my house, I've lost two businesses, I've lost my two stepdaughters to the medical community. The deal is that I don't like put the focus on my losses, but more on what insight I gained from all of these experiences, and to link them together and realize that I'm not the only one that's experiencing these things. And so in some ways it makes me think that some of those things were, you know, definitely not just happenstance and happened, but you know, lots of things were definitely planned for me. I mean, I was supposed to die at 17, but I didn't. My dad did in my place. At one point they threatened me with electroshock therapy if I didn't snap out of it, and I was on so many drugs too, right? So you know, so I had to like all of a sudden add another personality so I could be in the matrix in a way that everybody found me acceptable, because I was really angry and stuff, and I could be pretty hateful back in those days. I could, you know, make a grown man cry, and I did it many times, those are the only things that I regret, was that my son saw me do those kinds of things, you know, I didn't like the fact that he was saying it as a positive thing, when I always felt that it was very not who I was. It did not reflect who I really am. But I was doing it because of, my fear and my doubt and the sadness and the anger and the hate that was in my heart because of things that I felt had been done to me.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle.
No, it's good to just release all that, because I don't live in fear or doubt or anger or sadness or any of those things anymore. And I actually live in the place that my mom and dad were very, very good about giving back to me, which was my soul intuition and telling me from a very young age that I always had to listen to that. No matter what was going on, I had to listen to that. Always listen to that. That was their message, and it was said to me in many different ways all throughout my life. And I have to thank them, because even though there was things they did that were really questionable and not what people would think a normal, set of parents would do, they did it because that's what they were raised with. That was their modeling. They had no other choice, because in order to keep the family that they cared about, they had to make these certain adjustments, even though they didn't really agree with them in all instances. But there were still all these, you know, wonderful seeds that they dropped with me that bloomed into the person that I am now, who lives in that place they told me I always needed to be living. And if it's possible for me, with the history that I have and with the history that you have, for us to reach out and extend ourselves in this esoteric world and away from the matrix, really, because it is about being in a different frequency, on a different wavelength, having a different perception of every event that happens, and accepting it and saying, okay, what's useful, what's not, and we don't consent to whatever is not useful, and we consent to the part that is useful, and let's keep on that wavelength and that frequency.
But that's just like focusing
it
on
it is
your
a
life.
Task, but well, and that's well,
focus
and the deal
on,
is that it is a task.
Matters. Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Just focus on what matters to you. Right? Well, and our whole life is about getting us distracted from that, right?
Exactly. And
really far,
you know, for me to get up every day, I want to be better than I was yesterday. What can I improve on? So that's part of the hawk mindset too, in this whole paradigm that we're trying to create for people, so that they can think outside the box and still live close to the box, is that you create your own reality, on the thoughts and intention that you have in your life, and to get to those places, we have to continue to seek knowledge. We have to continue to be, we have to behave in the knowledge once we get it. And then we have to take action in it. And then we have to share it. And that's really what we're doing here.
But all I hear is rhetoric, Laura. I mean, I think for me right now, I want, it's just about experiencing. Being here in my present, experiencing it. You know, I don't mind talking about esoteric things, and I like it, because that's what attracts me to Bill Brock Creator videos, especially the alien one. I mean, it's so cool.
I
think I was in the 200th episode of Stargate. I think I was an extra in that. That's kind of funny. It was one of the series finale, but I don't know if it was, because it's funny. I was wearing glasses, and we were all joking, and they let me on the set with these glasses, and we were all joking about, well, wouldn't they have discovered a way to make eyesight perfect by then? how does that work? How does that work that Bill does with that, you know, secret space program and that alien information, which I find fascinating, but it does carry the ring of truth for me in that. It may not be, you know, I ring of truth in that I can integrate it into my own a priori knowledge, which is knowledge you don't know where it came from. So I can, you know, I feel more and more strong in that every day. And so I don't want to inject rhetoric I don't even want to write my dreams down. I don't. I mean, I felt so much pressure from somebody, you should write your dreams down. It's like, yeah, no, I don't. I'll just remember them when it's right to remember them. And I do. You know, I'll remember a dream I might have had 20 years ago at a certain time. Well, that's when I'm supposed to remember it, right? I just don't want to do these things. Maybe I'm a little lazy. I don't know. But I just don't want to do something that I think there's no value in it. Reprogramming or, you know, positive affirmations. But I'm at the point now where I want to, boots to the ground type of experience. And I feel that I'm set up in my way that I have this grounding that I can emanate from this, you know, my intention is clear, right? So I just want to spread it, right, rather than try to define it. I already have defined it. That's the way I feel about my life right now. So I just want to, you know, I want my life to be the reality for everybody. Which, you know, I suppose could be interpreted as some kind of dictatorship, but it's not.
I don't think that's what I got from that. What I got from it was that, you know, you're living your life in the purpose that, kind of there for you to find. And so, other people, you know, we all want to like make everybody fit into like our mold of or idea of who we think they are, but in actuality, those are always wrong. And we as humans love to like invest in expectations when, I think that it's that we just need to be, watching other people, because it's like the people that most people are watching are like these celebrities and things who are not an actual an actual
there's a lot of good
vision
out there,
you know,
the there's land and stuff, you know, they know better, they really do. And as you know, confounded and convoluted as religion is, I mean, most of the heartland people, you know, they're about the hard aspect of religion. They're not really about the, you know, the negative part of it. And that's mainly what you get in Canada. And maybe they're, you know, being led astray with the Christian conservative politics right now in Canada. But I think, you know, they are waking up because they know what they're being screwed around with. They're not that stupid. So, you know, that's, you know, most people are pretty good. Most people are, you know, are living in their heart-mind connection. There's a lot of them. I mean, I travel around. I do sales all over the place, and I see it, right? Most people are pretty decent. And it's not that much of a struggle, honestly, as well. I mean, it is. It's terrible. All these people, you know, just trying, you know, living in poverty. There's a lot of that. There's no question. And I dip in and out of it because I have high season and low season. So, you know, I never, you know, and my challenge this season is not to get too egotistical with my success. But I often do that. I get like, look at me, I did this all my own. And I go down some stupid road. So my challenge this year in my busy season, which is now approaching, is to just, you know, be humble about it and take it in stride and not, you know, make it, get it like as though, you know, I'll show them, which is huge in me. So, you know, those types of, which is part of the leveling, part of the grounding, part of the planting my flag. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, for Bill and Barack Brader, you know, the information's fascinating. It was, you know, part of his job. He did what he, you know, did to break free. But, you know, he's not the only one. And we all have our task, right? So in this grand play, and we're either, you know, on the right side of history or we're not. And right now, the separation, the divide is being evidenced. It's being seen. So that's what, you know, I think we could take out of this show is to, you know, just let other people, you know that it is now, you know, okay to see it and okay to call it and okay to let it be. Like as if within my old friend from high school, right? It's just like, well, okay, I guess you're not on the train, right? And I've had dreams before. Speaking of remembering dreams, I just remembered one that applied now of just being on an open road and a whole bunch of people walking down it. And it was like a pilgrimage, right? So, and it wasn't a past life dream. It was a future dream. So that's what I see for.
Well,
you know,
so I like that. Let's end on a future dream. And the thing for me is that I don't dream. Actually, I haven't had dreams in a long time. And but I live my dreams, so I guess maybe that's why I don't dream anymore.
So listen, guys, we're out of time. So
okay,
thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jakey. On that note.